Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
So we're on generator today, huh?
That is correct. That's correct. It's the propane, use today.
I feel awful because, Mark Lawrence texted me about 2 o'clock and said that he was on the bike and was tired.
Well, my turn hasn't come up yet, fortunately, so I'm still good for another hour or so. Bob Buhner, however, has taken his turn on the bike now.
Well, you know, by the way, you being on the bike is going to buy us about 10 minutes.
You're kind. That's about 9 minutes more than I was expecting, to be on it.
Bob, how are you? I hope you had a safe trip back from Michigan.
Steve, I had a great trip back from Michigan. It was not as long as I envisioned. It was fabulous driving across the state of Ohio and the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania Sunday afternoon. Bright sunshine. Sad to say, I listened to the Steelers game playing Cleveland. I thought of Kevin the whole way home. But yeah, it was a great time in Michigan, and thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
One of the funniest things that happened, I can tell the listeners and Kevin, on Friday night, Steve was the program speaker at a gathering of the Penn State Alumni Association over at Eastern Michigan University. Several hundred people in attendance. And I was sitting, Steve, next to a gentleman who was a graduate of Penn State living in the Detroit area, a PhD in biochemistry from Penn State. He teaches that subject for graduate students and does research at Wayne State University in Detroit. And Steve had come over to the table and met everybody at our table, and we were chatting, and then Steve did the program. And Steve, while you're up on the stage and going through the litany of statistics and the information you passed on, the fellow turned over to me and said, "Boy, that Steve Jones, he's really smart." And I said, "This is a PhD in biochemistry."
A PhD. So a PhD tells you I'm smart.
Exactly.
Really.
And I looked at him. I said, "Well, that's very true. Except he did get a B in biochemistry." And he looked at me, and I go, "He said, okay." I said, "But he did get A's in broadcasting."
Yeah, I actually did, yes.
And so he was, our table was thrilled that you joined us for that. It was an excellent Friday Night Alumni Association get-together, and everyone enjoyed what you had to say. And I think your predictions turned out to be exactly on point. And it was anybody's guess who was going to win at the end.
Well, you know, there are certain things, and I've started to talk a little bit more about this, and I'm going to expand on this just a bit, that when they were winning, and they were 4-0 off to a 4-0 start, I have not changed my tune at all as to what I'm saying now that they've lost a couple in a row. Because when they were winning, as I said how many times in the show, Kevin, look, it's remarkable what they're doing because, look, they're behind the eight ball.
Yeah, we've said that for a while, you know, that how well they're playing.
But I think that gets bypassed, and now when you're talking about it in the exact same way, with no change between September 15th and October 15th, oh, well, now you're talking about... No, I've been talking about this from day one. So when you look at what they're doing at this point, first of all, they have an entire second half of the season to go. And there's no doubt they're going to be challenging games along the way, but there isn't a game along the way you look at it and say, look, I mean, is there a game they can't win? And you'll also look at it and say, look, and there are also games along the way they can lose. It's just the way it is. The margin of error is ultra thin, which is something we've discussed the entire time. But when you look at the makeup of the football team, and I talked about this some Monday and some yesterday, they are operating right now at 64 scholarship players. That's recruited scholarship players. Okay, that's what we're talking about. Recruited scholarship players. 64 is the number. When you look at the breakdown of the football team, of the 64 scholarship players, there's even more that comes into focus because you do not want to mortgage the future and do things out of character, which means this. You've played 8 true freshmen so far. There are 24 freshmen in this class. You're saying 25. No, Terrell Barney is a junior college player, and thus he would not count in the freshman class. He is a junior. So he has another year of eligibility remaining. So he would be with the upperclassmen. So you have 24 guys that are eligible as freshmen to play this year. They have played 8 of them so far. That means they are trying to redshirt 16 of them. Everybody's trying to redshirt. Ohio State, you look at Ohio State's roster as an example. There are a lot of players dotting it that are true freshmen in there. But Urban Meyer also is trying to probably redshirt 10 to 15 guys. So everybody's trying to redshirt, if they can, 10 to 15 guys. Penn State's trying to redshirt 16. They were trying to redshirt 17, but they then took the redshirt off. They then took the redshirt off of Jason Kabinda and played him because they had to against Northwestern because of the injury to Naeem Wortman. Everybody has injuries. So Penn State has 4 players who were recruited scholarship players that are hurt. So everybody has injuries. So Miles Diefenbach, Ben Klein, Adam Brenneman, Jake Kiley have been out. So now you go from 64 down to 60 because of injuries. You also have 16 players being redshirted because you do not want to mortgage your future to get any kind of temporary short-term gain or maybe set things back. So in essence, at the moment, you are operating with 44 scholarship players. That's what you're operating at right now. 44 recruited scholarship players. There are 5 former walk-ons, by the way, that have been placed on scholarship. That brings you up to 49. Remember, there are 2 former players that are still enrolled at Penn State that remain on scholarship. And by the way, yes, they count against the 75. And by the way, they will count against the 85 next year. They still count. That's part of the sanction the NCAA put on. So when you look at the numbers, 64 recruited scholarship players. Like any team, they have injuries. Braxton Miller, for example, won't be able to play in the Ohio State game. As an example, Noah Spence is suspended. As an example, Trey Johnson is hurt, the linebacker. He won't be able to play. You know, so I'm just outlining that I realize everybody has injuries. Penn State has 64 recruited scholarship players. 4 of them are hurt, so now you're at 60 available. You are attempting to redshirt 16 of them. You are now at 44. If that does not graphically show where you are in terms of the number of answers that you have to turn to, nothing does. But this is not unusual because I have talked about this in June, July, August. Kevin, you and I don't know, Bob, if you were at the speaking engagement at Northumberland.
I was not.
Yeah, you talked about it there, too.
Sure.
I've talked about it everywhere because when I've talked with Bill O'Brien in 12 and 13, he repeatedly, and I don't mean this is just one conversation. I'm talking this might be 7, 8, or 9 different conversations. Jonesy, I'm really worried about 14. Says 15, I'm worried about it, too. Now, then they got some sanction relief, and when they did get some sanction relief, he felt a little bit better about 15, but 14 he was really, really worried about. And justifiably so, because these are the numbers you're operating with. 44. You're saying, well, yeah, they have the other 16. Yes, but do you want to mortgage your future by suddenly throwing guys in there for short-term gain, and maybe long-term it doesn't help them because they are not quite ready to play it yet as true freshmen? So those are the numbers. The numbers, 44 available that you're going to play in a game. When Penn State played Wisconsin last year, they had 36.
Steve, let me put this into perspective of what you and I were talking about the other day. We were comparing this to the Patriot League and Bucknell in the FCS level. Bucknell right now has 30 scholarships total. They can give a total of 60, but it'll take another 2 years before they are at the maximum number of 60. So right now they have 30 scholarship players, which is just a little bit less than Penn State has in the numbers that you're talking about with, I think you said 46. That puts into perspective apples to apples what you have, you know, what you're looking at in comparison.
Here's the difference, though, Kev, and let's be realistic here. Of Penn State's 64 scholarship guys, anywhere between 50 and 60 are FBS level talents.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So I want to be fair. All right. They are FBS level talents. Not all of them are, because not all of them make a smooth transition. Bucknell, in all fairness to Joe Susan, who does a great job, probably has 5 to 10 FBS level talents that he was lucky enough to get. Most other players are exactly where they should be on the FCS level. That's not a put down. I am so saying that you do have to, that I do realize that 50 to 60 of the Penn State 64, somewhere in that range, are all FBS talents.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that. I'm just trying to compare the numbers.
No, I'm just amplifying what you said, Kevin. Right. I'm just trying to give that a little bit of perspective, that because I'm not saying that one's closer to the other, but in terms of numbers, the difference is you're competing against schools that have 85.
Exactly.
And probably have between 70 and 78 FBS level talents.
I mean, I've made
on
this
their team.
I've made this comparison a couple of times. North Dakota State is a really good FCS team. They have about that many scholarships as what you're talking about with Penn State in total number. Are they competitive with some FBS schools? Yeah, they have been. Are they going to be competitive in a 10-game schedule against FBS? Probably not.
By the way, Kevin, it's your turn to get on the bicycle, power the generator here for the next 10 minutes.
So if we shut down at 20 of 4, I hope you enjoyed the show.
Exactly. Steve, by the way, the big house in Michigan was nothing short of spectacular. What a place.
Yeah, they've done a great job with it.
And
they really have.
Michigan fans, absolutely outstanding.
Everybody I ran into couldn't have been nicer to me, I know that.
And the beer we got walking through the parking lot was pretty was greatly appreciated.
I actually had somebody send me some Detroit vodka, which I'm sure is consumed heavily.
Yes.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, got to go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai, in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
There's a power outage today in Shamokin Dam.
And that's actually causing traffic lights to be out then, Steve, in that area of 11 and 15.
Traffic lights are out. Treat intersections as stop signs. Anywhere where the where a light is supposed to be, treat it as a stop sign until the power is restored. Also because of that, Sean Carey has been pedaling the bike to keep us on the air. We appreciate that very much. Sean, thanks so much. And not only that, Sean's also lost 8 pounds.
It's all in the over and above the call of duty that sometimes you do in this business. Pedaling the bike is one of them.
Sean's a trooper.
Oh, no question. Now, I want to get back to the scholarship numbers for a moment. Why do I bring it up? I'm not bringing it up as an excuse at all. This is not an excuse deal. It is a reality check deal. And it goes back to what I have talked about on this show repeatedly. And I've talked about this in the summer. I've talked about it when they were 4-0. Remember, when they were 4-0, I talked the same way that I'm talking now. That I constantly, as the broadcaster of this team, so that I have perspective as I watch them play out, remembering what those numbers are versus the fact that everybody else is at full strength gives me perspective on what I'm watching. And I cannot sit there as I broadcast the game and have the same expectation and analysis of this football team as I would have in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s when it was 85 and 85, when I could sit there and look at the game and say, you know what, I think that's going to be a 10 to 15 point game. That's going to be a 3-4 touchdown game. You know what, this is going to be less than a touchdown and go to the fourth quarter. You had a pretty good feel, I'd say 80% of the time, the kind of game that you might get. I'm outlining these numbers for you as I have outlined them from day one. I think I've mentioned, how many times have I mentioned the number 71, which included the walk-ons that received scholarships? How many times have I mentioned that number? Now, the numbers I've given you now are more in-depth because you have to now start including how many guys you're redshirting, what you're trying to do with certain personnel, how many recruited guys there are, so forth. I mean, just to let you know where they are. When you're down 21 recruited scholarship guys to the teams that you're playing, that is a full recruiting class. That's a full recruiting class. That's like taking an entire senior class, maybe part of a junior class, and kissing them goodbye. When Christian Hackenberg's class gets to be seniors, senior day is not going to take long. There are only 11 guys recruited in that class. And this is just, again, as I announce these games, in terms of why have I not done a lot of preconceived expectations for each game this year? There's a reason. Because Penn State is in such an unusual situation, I don't have a gauge on it. There are certain things about this team I really, really like. Defense is playing great. They're fifth in the nation in scoring defense, which you can put all the numbers up all you want. Scoring defense is the number one gauge in the end, okay? And they're fifth in the nation in it, 15.2 points a game. They're playing great defense. Offensively, I love the quarterback. I think he's fabulous. I also think that in order to be the best player that Penn State has to have in the field, he needs a little bit more room to operate. Now the question is, can they come up with ways to give more room to operate? It's difficult to stretch the field right now on certain plays. Why is it difficult? You need time to stretch the field. WKOK News reporting that 266 PPL customers are without power in Monroe Township, including traffic lights at Routes 11 and 15 in Shamokin Dam due to a power outage. They are working hard to put everybody back online. But again, as you drive around that area, treat traffic lights as stop signs. That way you can avoid problems in the intersection.
That's 265 PPL customers and Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation.
That's also
yes,
true.
Absolutely. You know, Drew Kelly now taking his turn on the bike. Allie Stevens, by the way, put in 4 hours. Drew says he's going to put in 20
well,
minutes.
The problem is both those two got done running a marathon over the weekend. So
did they really?
Yes. Yes, they did on Sunday, I believe.
Yeah,
it was.
Drew is referring to riding the bicycle to keep the generators going as his cool-down period. But I did notice when he got on the bicycle, Kevin, did you notice how the lights kind of went up a bit?
It did, and then they dimmed down at about, after about the first half mile.
Yeah.
I don't quite understand.
800-795-9565, you'd like to call in. 800-795-9565. I'm doing all this to lend some perspective to what we're watching. And it's something I try to keep in mind as I do this to realize I think Penn State starting 22 can be as good as anybody starting 22. I mean, defensively, the starting 11 is as good as anybody's. Christian Hackenberg, tight ends, running backs, wideouts. Obviously, up front, you don't have the luxury of building an offensive line the way you want. And how do you want to build an offensive line? Idealistically, you want to build it with some veterans and then wean in young players and give them experience and build from there. It also comes down to, as well, it's the most difficult spot on the field to break into as a freshman or a redshirt freshman. That is the offensive line. It just takes longer, normally, to develop offensive linemen. Back to life in football. Now, there's some offensive linemen that as freshmen come out right away or redshirt freshmen right away, and boom, boom, they've got it. Most of them, you have to wean them in, put them in a series here, a series there, have them work around some veterans, things like that. And that's how you have to do it. You look at how they coach this football team. When Marcus Allen's out there playing safety, is Marcus Allen, Grant Haley, and Christian Campbell out there together? No. They are out there one at a time with veterans around them. Even when Gary Wooten comes in as a redshirt freshman at middle linebacker to spell Mike Hall, they always make sure that Naeem Wortman is next to him because Wortman knows all the calls. He can get them into the right defense. And Wortman has that ability. He can help Gary out. That's how they want to do things. That's how they develop and wean players in this program. You see what they're doing at other positions. They have not had the luxury to wean Andrew Nelson in. They have not had the luxury of weaning Brendan Mann, Brian Gaia, or Derek Dowry in. It has been learn on the job and do the best you can to improve on the job. And that's what they're trying to do. And that is the bottom line. But I try to remind myself all the time about what these numbers are and that I am not watching traditional Penn State 85-on-85 football. This, of course, was all done by design. There's a reason why when you put sanctions on, they are supposed to hurt. And all of us that have been around the program have known since July 23rd, and then after 13 players left the program and so forth, with everything that was put in place and the restrictions on the amount of the number of recruits they could get in, you knew darn well that 2014 was that point where you're worried about the bottoming out. Well, there's still a 4-2 football team right now. This is not a 2-4 football team. They're 4-2. By the way, the traffic lights are now working on routes 11 and 15 in Shamokin Dam. So good news there. The traffic lights are now working on routes 11 and 15 in Shamokin Dam. So thanks to everybody for keeping us up to date.
Steve, one of the things that Michigan fans commented to me as I was going from tailgate to tailgate, seeking out food and beverage, was
naturally
how unfair the NCAA was to Penn State. If there was one overriding theme to the visit to the big house and the University of Michigan was the sympathy that Penn State had. There was sympathy by Michigan fans for the Penn State football team, the current and Bill O'Brien coaching staffs, about the incredible unfairness of the sanctions. So, you know, that's something that we moan about and are Penn State fans everywhere upset about. But it was surprising to me the depth of the feeling of Michigan football fans sympathetic about Penn State's situation and actually expressing a bit of admiration for how the football players have persevered through all of this. I was not surprised, but I was pleased.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm not surprised. I will say this, that the when you look at the Michigan fans, they do understand. They get it. I think they've always been able to get it. And I think that's great that they understand that part. James Franklin, though, when he took the job, did know what he was inheriting.
Sure.
And this is not one of those, I took the job, oh my goodness, now look what they did to me. Which, by the way, is the situation Bill O'Brien walked into. Bill O'Brien walked into a situation where he looked around and he really thought moving forward, despite the swirl around the program, that he was going to be operating on an 85-on-85 situation. He thought that from the time he took the job on January 7th of 2012 until middle of July 2012. He thought, as he went through spring practice, he was dealing on an 85-85 situation, that he was also working with a team that would get to a bowl game. And then suddenly on July 23rd of 2012, here's a guy sitting there 6.5 months into his job, and suddenly they've changed everything on him. You have to get down to 65. You can only have 15 scholarships. You're not going to be able to go bowl game. I don't care how well your kids play and how much they put into it. They're not going into a bowl game. Right? And that's what he's – that they changed. All of a sudden, the job changed for him. For James Franklin, he knew when he took the job that he was going to have a thin roster to work with in certain areas, and that they were going to have to do their job creatively to make this work and get the most out of it. So he knew going in when he took the job. Since he's taken the job, the door is open that if they can win a couple of more games, not easy, but if they can win a couple of more games, they'll get a bowl game. He knows that he will have 25 scholarships to give out in February. It won't get him to 85, but he knows he can give out the full complement of 25 scholarships. So he knows what he's dealing with. The next part of this is that my confidence in him and my confidence in his staff, because I'm around these people every day, is exponentially high. And it reminds me of facing the great starting pitcher in a big game. There's an old saying about facing the great starting pitcher in a big game. I don't care if it's Jim Palmer. I don't care if it's Curt Schilling. I don't care who it is. You'd better get them early, because if you don't, you will never get them. My recommendation to the teams that are playing Penn State now is, here's your shot. You better get them, because down the road, your odds of getting them are going to thin out dramatically. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. So what I've been doing here is basically perspective, just to really set everybody so that they understand what the rules of engagement happen to be. If it's not good enough for you and you're upset about how things are going right now, okay, that's your prerogative, and I totally understand that. But I at least want to be someone who has certain things at my disposal that maybe other people don't, to at least give you a perspective as to what I see and what I know.
Steve, a couple of questions Kevin and I were chatting about during the break.
That's always dangerous.
Well, Kevin's profusely sweating because he just got off the bicycle. Because we, even though the lights are back on down in the Golden Strip, they're not back on up here. So he's a little lightheaded. But a couple things. One, there was an onside kick
just
at the end of the game.
Steven. Just let it go. Let Bob ask his question. I know you're waiting for an opportunity. Just let Bob ask his question.
onside kick by Penn State at the end of the game.
Yeah.
It was
called
a penalty for offside. The question is, if the kicking team's player's head is over the line, but his feet are behind the line, is it truly offside, or was that not the best call that might have been made in that situation?
I've never looked at the kicking line as the neutral zone. I never have. I always looked at the kicking line as the kicking line.
Yeah.
They called the penalty on Jesse Della Valle, and it was not on him. In reality, it was on Jesse James. So instead of saying 39, they should have said 18. For Jesse James, it's a product of genetics. He's 6'6".
Well, his head was definitely offside. There's no question about that.
But I've never looked. Everybody says, "Oh, yes, and the line extends into infinity." Oh, please!
Exactly. Okay.
Common sense tells you that it's the line, and you're looking at the feet. I've never looked at the kicking line as the neutral zone. Never. Yeah. The next part of this is, okay, if he's offside because of his head, why did you throw a penalty on the second Michigan kickoff where the one player was a yard and a half offside with his feet? At least be consistent with me there, sport.
The other question has come up is the kicking game by Penn State or the punting game by Penn State has not produced the numbers in terms of length of kicking, et cetera, et cetera. And there's freshman from Australia that's kicked, I think, three times.
Yes.
Do we anticipate any changes in the kicking game? And I don't necessarily mean change in personnel, but, boy, it really seems like in terms of a field position battle, which was what the Michigan-Penn State game was throughout most of the game, we have been losing that on the kicking side.
Danny Pascarella actually did have the opening punt of the game against Northwestern. I think people don't realize that.
Right.
But he did. And it was okay. And then they brought Chris Gula into the game, and Gula actually punted in the Northwestern game pretty well. You are absolutely correct, though. When you are in a situation like this, field position becomes exponentially more important when you're in a situation like this. The average drive start in the two losses for Penn State's their own 25-yard line, which means on the average, they are 75 yards away. The average drive start for the two opponents in the games that Penn State didn't win is their own 41-yard line. That is 16 yards per possession, and you're looking at 27 possessions. You know how many yards that is? You're talking 432 yards difference in possession starts in two games. So the margin of error is razor thin. It means every punt that doesn't go the distance becomes magnified. It means any turnover becomes really magnified. It means any break or any penalty you get becomes more magnified. That's the situation you're in when it's that thin. Tony and Shimokan. Hi, Tony.
Good afternoon. That punt return against Penn State, the block in the back, why was that ball placed on the 7-yard line?
It's at the spot of the foul, Tony.
Well,
foul? I think they're claiming the spot of the foul would have been the 14-yard line, which means it would have been half the distance of the goal.
Well, then but they called it on number 36, am I right?
On Darren Thompson, yes. And I
right.
did. And Tony, I'll be fair. I want to be fair.
Was up around the 27.
Tony, I want to be fair that I did not see the penalty. So I didn't see one way or the other whether he did or he didn't. It could have been a 15-yard penalty, and they marked it from the 22 back to the 15. I mean, that could have been that, too. I don't know. But that's what they marked it on the 7.
It's a spot foul. And the only time I seen 36 touch anybody was on a 27, 28-yard line. I even said during the game, why are they marking it all the way back there on the 7-yard line?
Right.
I'm
just explaining what they do, and they mark the penalty from the spot of the foul, not the end of the run. And so whatever they thought the spot of the foul happened to be is what they have to mark off. I'm just explaining what their mode of operation is. I'm not explaining whether it was a good or a bad call because I don't know whether it was or not.
Yeah, I know what it was, but I won't say. All right, have a good day.
I understand, Tony. But again, I didn't see it, nor was I looking at the replay to see whether it was a good call or a bad call. I don't know.
You know,
it's one thing you want to do when you do this job. You also want to make sure you're fair and don't speak out of turn when you're not sure.
You know, Saturday's game, Steve, was the first time in at least 10 years that I have not listened to you on the radio do a game. I was lost
on
replay.
No wonder the ratings were cut in half. Thanks.